Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
En Camino with Kid Hogg.
Hello, good day and a warm welcome en el mes de pleno agosto to your Saturday supplement here live on Talk Radio Europe. Yes, you're in Camino with Jamie Dewson and me, Kit Hogg.
Good morning.
Oh, hi, Jamie. There you are.
Can you hear me?
On the other side of the screen. Yeah, I can hear you perfectly, and I'm sure everyone else can on the Costa Blanca,
Yippee!
Costa del Sol, Mallorca, all the way to Gibraltar. Well, he couldn't be with us on the show today. He's on holiday. Nevertheless, our president, Pedro Sanchez, is a politician that excites an extreme polarity of opinion. We'll explore two views from opposite ends of the spectrum, so opposed you might struggle to believe that they refer to the same person. The simple act of paying, or indeed receiving one. Exhausted by my grandchildren, I take them to Dino Expo, a Jurassic experience in Estepona. You may be aware of the total eclipse of the sun that plunges swathes of Iberia into darkness next Wednesday. We reveal the best spot to take it all in. Our story of Spain tells of the social and political rise of anarchism that swept the country prior to the Civil War in the 1930s, and the post-Brexit challenge of owning a second home here in Spain. It's all coming your way, or exactly what we can fit in over the next hour. So do stick with us.
En Camino with Kid Hogg.
A post on a site called Fact Reigns that appeared on my Facebook this week, which goes like this. Trump says, hand over the air bases. Sanchez says, no. Trump says, we'll kill your trade deals with tariffs. Sanchez says, do it. Trump says, we're pulling 3,000 troops out of Spain. Sanchez says, pull them. Trump says, we'll kick you out of NATO. And Sanchez says, do what you want. When the superpower demagogue demands, Pedro Sanchez says, no. Spain's president stands firm, undaunted. This leader is showing the world what true political courage looks like. In the face of overwhelming pressure, losing crucial trade deals, facing severe NATO ultimatums, Pedro Sanchez flat out refuses to surrender an ounce of his nation's sovereignty, nor its air bases. He's paying a massive political price for not backing down to the US. But this refusal to bow has sparked incredible national pride. Today, Spaniards rally behind a leader who proves he is built differently and always puts his country first. Not only is he giving two fingers to Trump, but Pedro Sanchez has released his summer playlist. It's on Spotify. It's called Verano 26 and includes songs that might give us an insight into the mind of Pedro. Desordenalo Todo, which means mix everything up, disorganize everything, by Depresión Sonora. Pesadillas, nightmares, that means, by Caro Jaco. Mentiras, which of course is lies, by Tito Rames. Unconditional by the Foo Fighters. Ripples in a Pond by Paul McCartney. And I Feel So Free by Madonna. But not all Spaniards are rallying behind their leader. The proffering of his summer sounds has occasioned major slagging by his myriad political opponents, who accuse him of DJing when he should be dealing with wildfires and invading migrants. In contrast to the accolade I just read you on Facebook, Juan Manuel de Prada, writing in the right-wing newspaper ABC, is particularly scathing. In an article entitled The Destruction of Spain, he asks, Can anyone deny that we're in the hands of criminals promoting the ruin of Spain, which is on the verge of becoming a failed state? Working himself into a lather that smacks of performative hysteria, Juan Manuel de Prada goes on to lay the blame of los incendios, the wildfires, fairly and squarely on Pedro Sanchez for squandering European money designated for fire prevention on, among other things, arming the puppet Zelensky. Quite who is pulling Zelensky's strings, Juan Manuel de Prada doesn't divulge, but having needlessly insulted probably the bravest modern wartime leader since Churchill, he goes on to rave about the hordes of riffraff who invaded Ceuta last week being the direct responsibility of Sanchez's government of chacales, jackals, who opened the doors to the jihadist invaders with a monstrous regularization of immigrants that has made Spain into a honeypot for all the ne'er-do-wells on the planet. In a frenzied climax of bigotry, he accuses each and every jackal in Pedro Sanchez's PSOE government of nothing less than treachery. Well, there we are. You might think that's bollocks, but hey, let's hear it for the free press. I mean, at least we can say what we want.
Exactly.
Janie, after such a slagging, let's talk compliments.
Well, I think there ought to be more of them, don't you? I mean, there's such a wonderful thing to give somebody. It's free. It only takes a second. You say something nice to them, compliment them on what they've done, what they've said, how they've managed a situation, something they've arranged, you know, maybe a successful party or basically they performed in a way like, for example, you know, you did a really good show on stage, for example. It's a really important thing, I think, to help lift people up by saying, if you feel it, really saying what you feel and not being afraid to do so. Do you do a lot of complimenting, Kit?
Yes, I try and be supportive. I think it's important that compliments are deserved and not gratuitous.
Of course, yes. I mean, there can be, you know, some people can sound, you know, like really too sugary and they're obviously after something. So, you know, you don't want to have too much of that.
There's nothing that sticks in the craw more than a compliment that is gratuitous, that isn't meant. You must need to be deserved.
Yes.
But yeah, it is about appreciating people. I don't think necessarily complimenting people on a stage show is really... I think the best compliments are people who maybe work behind the scenes or are doing well, you know, in their lives,
yes,
pulling things round that's not necessarily in full view.
Yes, yes, I agree. I mean, I listened to a lecture by a Stanford School of Business professor on the internet, and it was talking about basically how, you know, if you do give a compliment to someone, it does lift their mood and strengthens relationships and builds trust. It can help, you know, really push someone towards achieving more, going, maybe doing things that they would not have even thought of doing before that. But there's another way to, I mean, I don't think it's, you know, too many compliments on the physical appearance and the body aren't great. But as you get older, particularly for women, it's quite nice to receive an occasional compliment because we do get a little bit invisible in our older age. Some of us do, I think.
What's that supposed to be?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, when you...
Because
maybe...
I know. Oh, you look lovely today, Jenny.
Oh, thank you, darling. That was very forced.
But, no, you reminded me just how lovely you look.
Oh, thank you, hon. I've got a spot on my chin. But anyhow, I think that what we can do is we can dismiss compliments really quite easily. For those, some people who really, you know, they lack that, they don't want to be in the spotlight, for example, and you do give them a compliment and they go, oh, it wasn't really me, you know.
Now you're talking about receiving a compliment.
Yes,
now,
on the other end of them.
This is a different thing. Yes,
learning
how to accept a compliment.
It's an art, you know, actually.
Is it though? Really?
Well, for some of us, yes. I think it is. I think we can really, some people really lack confidence. clients, they're not used to being noticed or seen. And then when someone gives them a compliment, they don't really want to take it for themselves. I mean, it's quite common. I'm sure a lot of the other listeners would be feeling the same. I mean, I know when I was much younger, I used to feel really terribly shy and timid. And if someone played me a compliment, I'd almost like kind of curl up. I wouldn't sort of, you know, feel like an opening flower. I'd almost like disappear a bit, even more. But I think what we have to do as we grow and mature, you know, is to learn to take them and really just say thank you. Don't necessarily deliver them back. Just say, you know, or thank you. Or the person that's given the compliment doesn't have to. Yeah, exactly.
And gratitude. Yeah, for sure.
And I think we could all do it a little bit more because it helps to make us feel better. And researchers have discovered that giving good compliments is equivalent to giving them cash in terms of the dopamine hit it gives them, honestly.
Depends how much cash, surely. would you rather have a compliment or a lottery win?
Yes.
Really?
I don't think it was a very good comparison, to be honest.
I think I would prefer. I know which I would prefer.
But, you know, it can lift you up. If you don't, you know.
And people, if you won, people would say, well done for winning the lottery. Well, actually, maybe they wouldn't.
Oh, heaven's sake. Give me some.
Lucky bastard.
Anyway. I think we should be more confident about giving compliments and not worried about how another person's going to take it.
So now you're talking about the potential for jealousy. If there's jealousy lurking underneath, if there could be a little bit of envy,
yes.
If envy abides, then you're less likely to give a compliment.
Yes, but you could also, I suppose, more.
You look
if
wonderful, you, my dear. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, suppose also, you know, if you're a bloke and you're in a queue waiting for a cup of coffee and you see someone in front of you happens to be female and she's, you know, looking rather lovely. I mean, I'll do her.
Depends how it comes over.
Exactly. So it's all about how we're feeling, how we think we're going to deliver the compliment. And really, we can make mistakes. You know, some people will actually just say, oh, go away. You know, they think you're after something, especially if it's a bloke.
Yeah, particularly if it's a bloke complimenting an unknown female in a queue for a cup of coffee.
Well, exactly. And likewise, I wouldn't, you know, tell a gorgeous man they're a gorgeous man. You know, if I was standing in a queue.
Yes, but that's more of a pickup line, isn't it?
I suppose it is, yes. And yes, you could easily get squashed down after that. Anyway, I think that giving compliments builds foundations for reciprocity and positivity. It can lift people's moods. It can connect us. It helps us to feel recognised by those around us, etc. So I think we should do more of it.
Okay, so there's a thought for the day. Try and compliment somebody on something today, and see if you awaken that source of dopamine inside your soul.
Yes, encourage them to do even better.
Well, Janie, I'll tell you what, I need a compliment because after nine days, it felt like longer at times. Yesterday, I put my grandchildren on the aeroplane and waved them goodbye.
Wow, you had them for 10 days.
10 days, I think it was.
You did so well.
Thank you, darling.
Oh, how brilliant. Yeah. And you're a very good granddad. Except for you like to be called Grandpa, don't you?
No, I've invented the name Gampa.
Oh, Gampa.
Which is what my grandfather was called.
Okay.
So I've invented my grandfather, who lost his leg in the Battle of Ypres in 1914. He was called Gampa, so I'm happy to be called Gampa as well. At times I was walking around wondering if I was in heaven or hell. Hell existed in the house,
yes,
where I was just fighting a rear guard. There's three grandchildren.
Okay.
Yeah, aged 3, 4, and 5.
Whoa.
And they did have their mothers with them, my daughters. I have to admit, if I'd had them on my own, I would have gone mad.
Yeah.
But at home, it was like fighting a rear guard action, tidying up, whopping up messes, repairing things that are broken, moving things that were about to get broken, like the television remotes, things like that.
Okay.
There is absolutely no holds barred. Where I really enjoyed them was in the water. We spent probably 50% of our time
before it went green.
Oh, no, that was my swimming pool.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the river.
Okay.
The village pool, a friend's pool, and another village pool, the big pools. And in the water, it was just brilliant.
Oh, How lovely.
So that's where I really enjoyed them.
I hear you were also playing Catch the Watermelon in the sea.
yes, we didn't have a ball, so we tried. Yeah, that wasn't with the grandchildren. The watermelon was actually quite heavy and slippery. I recommend volleyball over a watermelon.
That would be better. Well, listen, I want to say absolutely well done. Do you feel a little bereft now
Totally. I mean, the house felt unbearably empty. I just hear the echoing voices.
And the mess left behind.
And also, the thing about saying goodbye to people is, if you say goodbye to somebody and you know when you're going to see them again, then that hurts less than this big open like, oh well, maybe we'll do something at Christmas.
Well, you must plan something, and that was recommended to me by my sister. She said, Janie, when your daughter goes back to the UK, you haven't seen her, or you leave the UK, just rather than get upset, just plan the next visit.
Yeah.
Exactly when it's going to be and what you're going to do. Not necessarily what you're going to do, but you actually have a date to look forward to.
Absolutely. Now, if you live anywhere near Estepona, you will have seen the posters of a mega menacing Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, yes.
Jaws agape. And you may have noticed a green Nissan pickup driving about with a caged Velociraptor in its bed. And around the exposition, this is the exposition of XX Dino World, that has come to Estepona. It's in the Palacio de Congresos. Around the Palacio de Congresos is a fleet of parked semi-trailers sufficient to transport a Rolling Stones tour.
So, of course, you must have taken the grandchildren there.
And that segues into my visit with the grandchildren.
Oh.
Exactly, Janie. Yes, it's Dino Expo XXL, 120 life-size dinosaurs that breathe and move, the full fat Jurassic adventure at the Palacio de Congresos in Estepona.
And were the grandchildren excited about seeing them?
Well, I'll come on to that.
The exposition
itself, at best, it soaks up a couple of hours of out of the disabling heat in this air-conditioned emporium, occupying grandkids who actually know way more about dinosaurs than you do, because let's face it, paleontology has been the childhood genre for most of this century.
Yes, true.
Did you play with dinosaurs as a kid?
Absolutely not.
No, and now they're everywhere.
Yeah. I did go to the Ashmolean when I was young and I saw enormous skeletons.
Yeah, but a skeleton is different.
Fossils.
When you put flesh or plastic over the skeleton and you make it move and its eyes start flashing, then you've got something truly addictive.
They can be fascinating.
Absolutely,
actually.
Hooks the imagination. I mean, all my kids have Gigantosaurus figurines that, activated on smartphones, move about the sitting room anyway. And so Dino Expo XXL was not quite greeted with the open-mouthed wonder and lit-up faces that might have gladdened a grandparent. Instead, there was a slightly circumspect inspection of the pouting, grimacing, groaning, growling exhibits, dominated by what I at least thought was a hugely impressive 8-meter-tall Tyrannosaurus Rex. Are they really that large? Mouth opening and closing around banana-sized teeth, around which were clusterpods. And some of them were quite funny. There was the unfortunate feathered Morus intrepidus, a weirdly grinning, spiny, sticking out teeth, trembling in the grip of some epileptic fit. There was a lurid, fan-headed Dilophosaurus of Jurassic Park fame. There was the Altoraptor perching precariously on its hind legs like some sort of lethal chicken. Say hello to the curiously named Irritator, obviously the dinosaur that gets under your skin. All the way from India, the Rajasaurus, a 6-meter-long chorizo-coloured two-legged lizard, and the 7.5-ton fish-eating monster, the frankly ridiculous Spinosaurus, leaving the charnel menace of the carnivores. We sought respite among the bovine herbivores, grazing statically on fronds of primordial plastic. And in these green groves, we met the Triceratops, the horned warrior, the Titan, the Argentinosaurus, another spiny one, the Gigantopinosaurus, The lunacy of the gentle giant, the ponderously vulnerable Diplodocus. One feels a carnivorous assault is pending at any moment. And the positively cute Aquilops, which is called the Little Traveller. Those are all plant-eating ones.
I'm very impressed that you said all those names.
I was noting them down. It was an immersive experience. Absolutely. Yeah, well, I was taking photos of them as well.
Uh-huh. And were they all enormous? Did they look real-ish?
Yeah, they looked real. The movements were kind of like a little bit... They returned to static, and the movements were sort of juddery.
Okay.
And not particularly convincing, and very limited movements. There wasn't anything gallivanting across the floor or anything like that.
Did they make sounds?
Yes, they made sounds. The whole thing was like a sort of cavernous discotheque of various groaning noises and flashing lights. It was an immersive experience. And it also included kind of educational stuff. There was footage of a mummy Tyrannosaurus Rex showing us that she really was a nice person by sheltering her minute, recently hatched babies in her enormous mouth. And for one hideous mouth. So you see this little egg hatching, and mummy sort of got her massive, great big head sort of right next to it. And she opens her mouth. And one ghastly moment, I thought she was going to eat the baby. But she keeps her mouth open, and this tiny little Tyrannosaurus Rex hops into her mouth and sort of shelters just on the inside of these massive teeth. It's like...
Sounds like you really enjoyed it, Kit.
That moment I enjoyed, yes.
I kind of enjoyed it,
but it's also a little bit of a money pit. I mean, there's Dino Donuts at the Dino Cafe that cost, well, we didn't explore the price. There are short-lived €3 rides on juddering gigantosauruses that literally just judder. I mean, the kids got on them, and they were bored. And then the ride stops, and it's like, is that it? And there are soft, cuddly dinosaurs on sale at the dino shop. I mean, given that you pay €10 per child and €12 for yourself.
Whoa.
It is all a bit of a money pit.
That is, yes. I mean, I did see these dinosaurs being driven around behind a truck.
Oh, yeah, they're quite... I think it's a French company.
Okay.
And because all the trucks are French matriculated, and they do a good job of promotion. And it is a refuge, you know. If you've got your grandkids and you think, what am I going to do? It's far too hot to be outside. They'll all get shriveled up and there's not enough sunblock. Go to the Palacio de Congresos and enjoy the dinosaurs. It's a good hour and a half's entertainment.
And is it on for the whole of August?
Oh yeah, I think it's on until September, but check Google it because it's there. Listen, it's break time.
Okay.
We'll be back with a total eclipse of the sun.
En Camino with Kit Hogg.
Avellanosa de Muño is preparing for one extraordinary night. There are villages that feel quiet, and then there's tiny Avellanosa de Muño in the northern Spanish province of Burgos. It has no restaurants and no shops, a bar that never opens and a bodega that never will again. But listen closely, and a subtle melody begins to sound. A low bass line murmurs from carpenter bees hovering in a trance around lavender bushes, toasted by the harsh summer sun. Above them, birdsong from black and white swallows darting between stone rooftops echoes through near empty streets. Beyond the houses, the rumble of a lonely tractor is often the only vague sign of human life. That is, until an unassuming white van from a nearby bakery snakes through once a week to deliver bread to the handful of residents who still live here, briefly stirring them from the village's sleepy spell. For these people, this is the rhythm that shapes daily life in a place where, on most days, nothing really happens at all. Yet this summer, a village usually characterized by its abundance of absence will transform into one of the most exciting places to be on the planet. On the 12th of August, that's next Wednesday, 2026. A total solar eclipse will sweep across the Atlantic, marking the first time since 1999 that one will be visible from mainland Europe. According to Madrid-based physicist Dr. Maria Teresa López Sánchez, it will be the first total solar eclipse visible from mainland Spain since 1912. However, totality will be visible only along a narrow path across the continent, and Avellanosa de Muño lies directly within it. But what makes this tiny village such a compelling place to watch is the landscape. Golden wheat fields and low hills open onto a broad western horizon with few buildings, little artificial light, and almost none of the crowds expected at better known viewing sites. The timing makes the eclipse even more special because it will take place shortly before sunset. It will create a double twilight effect like live minutes. Later that night, the Perseids meteor shower will also be visible, creating a rare convergence of celestial events. For resident Sara Alvarez Rodriguez, there is no doubt where she will send people. Go up toward the cave, she says. From there, you can see everything. Born in Avellanosa de Muño in 1937, Alvarez has never lived anywhere else. In her nearly nine decades here, she's watched the village completely transform. In the 1950s, she tells me, the village had roughly 200 inhabitants and several small shops. Fishmongers from here would travel by bicycle to nearby villages to sell their catch. Raúl Grande Revilla, who was born here 73 years ago but moved to Madrid as a child, remembers arriving by donkey to deliver letters and newspapers. Half asleep in the saddle, the postman could rely on the animal to know where to stop, including at the small post office that used to tail end the village. For generations, the village survived on dryland agriculture, vegetable gardens, vineyards, and livestock. And then agriculture became mechanized. With few other jobs nearby, people left for cities like Madrid, Bilbao, Barcelona, and beyond. To get to Avellanosa de Muño, it's around 30 minutes drive from Burgos, and it's just over 2 hours from Madrid. There's no tourist accommodation. This is in case you're thinking of going. I actually was thinking of going.
I'd love to go. I'm really turned on by this idea.
It's just a long old drive, Jenny.
No, but I'd do that just for an adventure.
And there's no tourist accommodation in Avellanosa de Muño. And the hotels, listen to this, the hotels in nearby Lerma have been booked for some time. There's still apparently availability in Burgos or in Madrid from where a day trip is possible. But then you've got to deal with traffic because a lot of people are going to head up there to watch it.
Well, I could sleep in my car.
You could sleep in your car. When to watch? In Avellanosa, the eclipse begins around 7:30 in the evening.
Yep.
With totality, that's when it goes totally dark, shortly after 8:30. And the totality lasts for just under 2 minutes. And then the advice is don't leave after sunset, because the Perseid meteor shower will also be active that night. So loads going on.
There is.
At Avellanosa.
Isn't there a whole lineup of the planets that starts at the beginning or the possibly the following morning? Unusual lineup of all of the planets?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
It's a very extraordinary time, and I'd love to see it.
It's super auspicious. It's the kind of time where you think you might get reborn in some sort of new, more enlightened phase of your life. But try today, more goats graze the surrounding hillsides than people live permanently in the village, and vast fields of sunflowers stretch across the landscape where hundreds of villagers once worked the land. But this some of the eclipses beckoning some of those families back. This article, which I'm plagiarizing from the BBC. Thank you to the BBC. But I was so captured by the possibility of going out. I'm not sure that I will, but I've got a place to live, because I'm moving out of my house quite soon. Oh yeah, the Parador de Lerma is the posh hotel, which is close by, housed in the former palace of the Duke of Lerma, and that's been booked up for the event since 2022.
Good Lord!
Really?
Wow! Some people really are devoted, aren't they? And so this would be for us. It would be about a 7-hour drive.
No, it would be longer than that, Janie. If you put it into Google Maps, it comes up with 8 hours.
Okay.
But then that's not stopping. I mean, that's like just rolling on.
Yeah, well, you have to stop, don't you?
You have to stop. So, and then you've got to come home. So you come home the next day. I mean, that's two full days in the car.
Okay.
Anyway, if you're tempted to go up, do let us know how you get on. I might even see you there, but I have to say, at this stage, it's unlikely. One of the reasons, my car's broken, and I'm still waiting for it to be fixed.
Oh, Kit and his cars.
Me and my cars, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
My girlfriend's car's broken as well. So,
handy.
At some point, we have to go up to Rhonda to pick it up. Janie, the story of your summer. You've got a rather charming little story.
Yes, this
isn't summer, kind of when the nostalgia of remembering. I mean, here we are in pleno Augusto. The silly season, the time when we're on holiday, the time for holiday romances, the time for formative experiences, when you think back to maybe one of those formative experiences.
If you are actually on holiday, yes, which we're not. We live here, so it's slightly different. But you do get a break when we have visitors. Anyway, this is from a recent series of essays titled The Summer That Made Me by columnist Gemma Kelly. She writes, I had just turned 16. My brother was about to join my sister at Cambridge, and my eldest sister was just starting life as a doctor. But I wasn't going to do things the same way as the rest of them. I, the youngest, the dissenter, was going to be a pop star. My mother hugely disapproved, but my father felt he should support my dreams. Excuse me. So he allowed me and the two school friends I'd started singing with to have his house for a week. We treated it as a kind of boot camp. We practiced harmonies, did hundreds of sit-ups a day for the sake of our crop top and low-rise jean combos, and studied videos of Destiny's Child and Britney Spears. Urban Clique became the name of our girl band, inspired by the most urban of sources, my father's Oxford English Dictionary. Formed in the most urban of places, the upmarket seaside town of Aldenburg, Suffolk. If you are doubting my own credentials, I was, for all intents and purposes, posh clique. We both fish and chips. Oh, sorry. We bought fish and chips and sat by the beach writing our first song together. Baby, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of you. You're driving me crazy, boy. What's a girl to do? Went the opening lines. It was a legit banger that would see us sitting, trembling, opposite an A&R executive at Polydor Records the following year. I would stay at school until 18, but not go back until formal education for another 6 years as I tried to make it in the music industry, earning money by working in bars, shops and boutique bowling alleys and partying pretty hard in Camden and East London. I never did quite make it, but it made me who I am. I think that's lovely.
That is lovely. Yeah, yeah. I've got a message here from Koibi.
He's asking, is Maria Teresa López Sánchez related to Paulo López Sánchez at all?
Well, mate, you're in a better position to tell us that, bearing in mind that Paulo López Sánchez is your recently wedded wife.
Oh.
Now, it's time for a story of Spain. Sometimes you feel sorry for the owner of two homes, one back in their own country, the other here in Spain, which they bought just maybe in a head rush of longing for anything but grey, seduced by Dama de Noche nights and the twinkling blue Mediterranean, aided and abetted by an infectiously friendly inmobiliario estate agent, fueled by sangria-sodden dreams of Shangri-La, which indeed it was when they bought it 30 years ago. Campo, a country house where goat bells tinkled and the friendly cabrero waved his saludos on the camino that passed through this hinterland of rural parcelas between mountain and Mediterranean. Today, access to their second home, seriously compromised by Brexit, tax demands from an increasingly avaricious hacienda, dumped on the wrong side of boom and bust with rising maintenance costs, a leaking swimming pool and a subsiding terrace, recent flood damage and huge water bills for irrigating the garden. The mellow countryside they'd bought into is now unrecognisable. Yesterday's campo, tawny with gorse and romero, is now today's campo, Del Golf, immodestly Dubai green, surrounded by a burgeoning estate of chalets which still mushroom under the fluttering pennants of the promoter. Without consultation or necessarily even warning to the residents, the unsealed but serviceable camino where the cabrero once trod with his goats has been replaced by infrastructure. Sidewalks and streetlights between which are black tarmac and white lines, a pompous roundabout around which an increasing volume of cars, previously moderated by the uneven surface, drive disconcertingly fast. For the privilege of this unwanted modernity, along with the other residents of the community, the friends I was with this week are in receipt of a 35,000 euro bill from the Ayuntamiento. Oh, and I should mention the perimeter wall to their property, now undermined and sagging due to the road improvement adjacent, a mere 13,000 euros to rebuild, for which the Ayuntamiento deny any responsibility. Oh, and their garage, for months unusable, because the new road surface was 35 centimetres higher than the original level of the entrance. Oh. So they couldn't get their car out of the garage. And that at least has been repaired by the culpable town hall.
Is this somebody you know?
Yes.
Oh, how horrendous.
Inexplicably, the garage is now too small to accommodate the car it once housed, which now sits with its rear end hanging out over the pointless new pavement. Garage doors open. To add insult to injury, during my first visit to these poor people, an octogenarian couple, they were struggling with an embargo on their bank account due to Movistar bills for a phone they no longer have. So what is it about a second home? Out of sight for so much of the time. These friends, by the way, live most of the year in Halifax, Yorkshire.
Right.
So I'm asking, yeah, what is it about a second home? Is
that I wouldn't know. I haven't got a first one.
Very good, Jenny. Yeah. Yeah, well, look, if you do get a first one and you think about getting a second one, bear in mind that it is out of sight for so much of the time, it's out of mind, and it's so easy to turn into a plug hole for draining your cash.
Oh, yes. I have a friend who's given up that idea now. She's sold up and moved back to the UK in complete, you know, completely.
I remember her. She appeared on the show.
Alison.
Did she not? Oh, Alison, maybe she didn't.
Oh, no, that's Liz. Yes, right. Yes.
Another second homeowner.
No. Yes, she hasn't sold. She's actually rented out her place here. No, this was prior to that. This was prior to Brexit. A friend of mine, old school friend, bought a place in Chiclana. And their idea was they would eventually retire there. But then Brexit happened. They'd kept the house in Cardiff, and they found because they couldn't come back often enough and because of the restriction on times and they were sort of locked out really because of the tax situation, they'd come back to Chiclana and they'd find the place utterly wrecked. Because mainly because of the winds down there. And just maintaining it became impossible and they just couldn't do it. And so they've left.
And I imagine that is a huge weight off their minds.
Yes, I think it is.
I mean, I'm tempted to buy a bolt hole in the north. If I had the money, I would maybe buy maybe even just a plot of land that I could park my caravan on. Something that really you don't want to maintain. Obviously, if it's a house, you need to be able to lock it and leave it, unless you go down the ambitious route of renting it.
Or you could have a little plot of land, and if you really want it, I suppose that you can go and retreat to it and buy a motorhome, which is what my friend Alison did.
Yeah, a plot of land necessitates some sort of accommodation, obviously. Anyway, this couple from Halifax, whether it occurred to them to sell, I'm not sure, because I haven't seen them for a while. But having listened to their story, I did ask them what was so horrible about their house in Halifax that made their house in Spain worth hanging on to.
En Camino with Kid Hogg.
Yes, welcome to the part of the show we call Things That Grow, and there are a few flowers around that have that sort of, I don't know, naive, simple, honesty, picture book quality as the
hibiscus.
Say that again.
Hibiscus.
Oh my goodness. We love the hibiscus. Do we love the hibiscus?
Well, I've just fallen in love with the. Tell you what,
They're kind of brave, aren't they?
Astounding
flowers.
Give
the finger to the sun and say, well, I'm going to soak you up anyway.
Oh, absolutely. I went for a walk around to actually pick some blackberries yesterday, or the day before yesterday, which, did you know, Kit, there are blackberries budding out on the bushes at the moment?
Blackberries in Spain, what's that like? They are gritty. They get stuck in your teeth. I'm thinking of the yummy berries in Wales that are sort of fat.
They're not like Welsh blackberries. Anyhow, the point is I was walking around with my Tupperware to go and pick some blackberries. And as I did go turn the corner, I saw this fabulous bush of flowers, which had not actually opened up. But I know those flowers because I've walked past them several times. I wasn't sure what they're called because I'm not a great, you know, knowing all the names of plants person. But I thought they must be hibiscus. And I just happened in my house to also have a large jar of hibiscus dried flowers, which I've been drinking as a tea.
Ah, yes, hibiscus tea. Yeah.
That's right. Now,
what does that do for you?
Well, you see, I'm going to go backwards because I went and I picked some of these flowers off the bush because it's absolutely enormous. There were lots of them. And I thought, oh, I wonder if these will actually blossom once I get them home. And so I put them in the jar. Nothing happened. And as the morning sort of progressed, suddenly I looked around and there was these glorious trumpet-shaped flowers, absolutely rich with colour, the most fabulous appearance. And I was just gobsmacked by them, sort of a pinky red colour with a sort of yellow long frondy stamen.
Yeah, I'm glad you said trumpet. That was the word that I was groping for in my introduction to the hibiscus.
They are really they're tremendous. I mean, and I just thought, wow, they're amazing. And I've been looking up about them. What I was a little bit disappointed about was the following day, they'd all dropped off. The flowers had dropped off. And that's actually what they do. They will only last two, 3 days maximum. They do this amazing show, ta-da! And then they're gone.
Oh, I thought they lasted long time.
No.
Or maybe they push up another one. Because you see hibiscus typically in flower.
You do. So this is the thing.
Lots of flowers.
Yeah, they flower all
lots
year.
Lots of short-lived flowers.
Yeah, they flower
right.
all year long. And they just open up a couple of days, here I am, and then they plop off again. I'm fascinated by them. It's just an extraordinary show of nature, which I had never really taken much notice of. Anyway, I've been looking them up. And there are 433 different varieties, species of hibiscus. They are common in the tropics and in subtropical climates. Obviously, they grow here as well. They are famed in the Philippines, for example, where they're called the gumamela, the local name for hibiscus. And that's used by children as part of a bubble-making pastime. The flowers and leaves are crushed until the sticky juices come out. Hollow papaya stalks are then dipped into this and used as straws for blowing bubbles.
Oh, sweet.
Isn't
hibiscus
that lovely?
Bubbles. Oh, wow, amazing.
And together with soap, the hibiscus juices produce more bubbles than just soap on its own. It's also the hibiscus flowers traditionally worn by Pacific Island women, and is a known shared custom that if the flower is worn behind the left ear, the woman is married or has a boyfriend. If the flower is worn on the right, she's single or openly available for a relationship. There are other sort of myths and legends around the flower, and it's also used in Ayurvedic medicine. And it's also used for making paper. One species of hibiscus known as the hibiscus cannabinus is extensively used in paper making and it's also used in rope construction in Polynesia. I mean, I'm absolutely taken by this plant, which is extraordinary. And also there are claims that I take it and I tell you what it helps. It reduces blood pressure. It's very good for the heart. It's also meant to be helps with cancer improvements. It has very high levels of vitamin C, anti-inflammatory action, all sorts of things, antimicrobial properties, blood sugar management. All sorts of things. And so I'm very taken by it. And you can actually drink it, as I said, in a tea. It's quite sour, but
fruity.
Jane,
you've got a call. Hang on a sec.
Oh, no. Should we answer it?
Hello, can you hear me? Oh, no, I can't hear you on air. Hang on a second. Let me just see if I can put this. We very rarely have calls. Can you hear me now?
Oh.
Now, oh no, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. We'll speak later. That's a shame.
What a pity.
Did Eamon just get a lesson on how to use the phone? That's fascinating stuff, darling.
We will.
We have got a message from Paul Crosby, who says that the waves from our second home in Chiclana, gentle breeze today in Chiclana.
Oh,
so
how lovely.
He's in the second home and he apparently has no regrets.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes, I do want to talk about one other thing in things that grow, which is completely different from hibiscus. I just want to close with this. As billionaires across the globe prepare their bunkers for the Third World War, tech founder Martin Vazavasky is setting up a base in a desert in Argentina, far away from the world's nuclear superpowers and close to the fertile plains of Mendoza, Argentina's wine capital. He's betting this is the best place to survive Armageddon. After buying 32,000 scrubby hectares, including a 5,000-metre mountain, Vazavasky is installing prefab shelters and studying whether large language models can be downloaded onto solar-powered computers to create your own limited internet. What do you make of that?
Well, I only heard part of it because we just got a little visitor to ask if we got through on the managed to answer the call, which we didn't.
Only Amy had been a few seconds earlier.
Yeah, I got slightly distracted, but it sounded a bit grim what you were saying then.
This sad individual has brought an enormous thinker in the foothills of the Andes across an expanse of rugged terrain, five times the size of Manhattan, because he thinks Third World War has already started. He is determined to survive the Third World War. He is determined to live on after Armageddon. What would you want to live on after Armageddon?
I don't think so at all, no. I'd rather go with the rest of us. Wouldn't
you? There you are, Jay. Yeah, I kind of wonder whether it's worth this investment. But I suppose you've got loads of money. The world after Armageddon could be an interesting place. You know, there's certainly going to be less of us around.
I don't think it'd be very pretty. It could probably be rather dangerous in terms of other people, maybe. Also, you know, chemical, nuclear fallout, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's super remote. But what strikes me is that he's already fabricating his own.
I mean, for heaven's sake, really. It is very sad.
Yeah, it's very sad.
I mean, I
would say to him, get a life.
Yeah.
And on that note.
I did hear that Mr. Trump has also, apart from actually demolishing most of the White House, he has actually got permission to build the bunker underneath his not yet got permission for ballroom.
So that bit's
allowed.
Well, he's only going to be around for another 2 years.
Two and a half years
of Trump.
And pray. Sorry, shouldn't give my
political... Armageddon will probably happen while he's on his golf course in Mar-a-Lago or whatever.
Cheerful news for the end of the programme.
We're going to wish you a very happy weekend.
Yes.
And look forward to seeing you next week. This is Jamie and I signing off.
Bye.
En camino. Adios.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.